Okay, so last week we started, we started a couple of weeks ago looking at a series on learning from Jesus. And we looked at the topic 2 weeks ago of the prodigal son, the lost son. And then last week we looked at the Good Samaritan. Looked at kind of what can we learn from Jesus in the story of the Good Samaritan. Some of the stuff we've talked about before, but hopefully there was something in there that not only kind of, I suppose, reveals a bit more of what was behind the kind of reason for Jesus to tell those stories, but also the inspiration of what it means for us now. Because I'm a kind of keen advocate to think, what can we glean from Jesus' teachings that could change our lives this week? What can we learn that can shape how we operate after we leave this place today? And what kind of impact can that have on us this week? So we're continuing to look at some of these parables, and we're going to look at the lost sheep today. And we kind of touched on this 2 weeks ago, because the lost sheep exists in the same chapter as the lost son, the prodigal son. And there's like a continuation of three stories that Jesus trying to make a really clear point to the people who are sat listening to him. And as we said a couple of weeks ago, the context of the story happening is basically as normal with Jesus. People are there. He's kind of hanging out with people who the religious types and the Pharisees think are kind of sinners and people of not good character. And they're critical of Jesus' decision to associate with those kind of people. So Jesus is telling these three stories. He tells the lost sheep, the lost coin, and the lost son as an example of this is what I think is important to God. So if you want to go back, if you weren't here 2 weeks ago and wanted to listen to the prodigal son one, that's a good story, and it's a really brilliant kind of example of how Jesus reveals the nature of God and what's important to God. But we're going to look at the lost sheep today. We're going to read that. So we're reading in Luke 15. And I just need to get to my Bible. Luke 15, it's right at the start. And I'll kind of include the kind of context of what it talks about. So verse 1, it's verses 1 through to 7. It says this: "By this time, a lot of men and women of questionable reputation were hanging around Jesus, listening intently. The Pharisees and the religion scholars were not pleased at all. They growled, 'He takes in sinners and eats meals with them, treating them like old friends.' Their grumbling triggered this story. 'Suppose one of you had 100 sheep and lost one. Wouldn't you leave the 99 in the wilderness and go after the lost one until you found it? When found, you can be sure you would put it across your shoulders, rejoicing, and when you got home, call in your friends and neighbours, saying, "Celebrate with me, I found my lost sheep." Count on it, there's more joy in heaven over one sinner's rescued life than over 99 good people in no need of rescue." So we talked about this a few weeks ago. We didn't particularly focus on this story. But the interesting thing with these stories is it starts with the lost sheep, which is the number in that story is 100. It starts with 100 sheep. Okay. And then the next story Jesus tells is the lost coin. And I did a bit of reading. And the lost coin, the background of that story is not just about a woman who was careless with her change and accidentally lost a coin. What the lost coin is relating to is the bridal the bridal gown that people would wear when they got married. And in that gown, there would be 10 coins. So for you to lose one of your 10 coins was a real shame and there was shame on you for losing something so precious. So we've gone from 100 and then we've gone down to 10, and then the lost son story is about one thing that's lost. And what the kind of people who try and interpret these stories talk about is how the value goes up as we go down the numbers. So 100 sheep, 10 coins, and one son. The audience will have got the importance, and Jesus telling these stories in this order was really important to try and make it kind of a wide kind of perspective and easy for people to understand the first one, and then it gets more serious, and then it gets even more serious, and suddenly everyone can see the clear point of what Jesus was trying to make. So we're going to focus on this story of the lost sheep. And it's a story that you've probably heard many times before. That image of a shepherd going and finding this one sheep, putting it across its shoulders and carrying it back. It's this rescue story. The songs that we sing that reference leaving the 99 to go and find the one. And I love this picture and this image of Jesus. And I don't find in this story there's much hidden stuff. I'm not suddenly going to blow your mind with some information that you never knew about this story. But what I love about it is what it reveals of the nature of God. And when we think about the detail of what Jesus chose to talk about, he chose to talk about the role of a shepherd and this kind of image of there being sheep that needed to be cared for. It was something that everyone listening to the story could relate to. Because people farming sheep was very common. Sheep were important animals in society in ancient times. The wool was used for clothes. Their milk was rich tasting and often used to make cheese and buttermilk. Their skin was used for clothing, or it was stretched and used as a canvas for writing. Their horns were used for transporting oil and other liquids and used as a drinking vessel. And their meat was used for eating. It wasn't commonly, people didn't eat meat all the time. Meat was eaten for celebrations and for special occasions. So lamb was used for that. But also it was commonly used in sacrifices. So they were important animals, and every single part of a sheep had a purpose and had value in it. So it wasn't just that these were kind of common animals that you just let run free and hopefully you could gather enough together at the end of the day so you felt like you'd done a vaguely good job. They needed caring for. They needed looking after. And the role of the shepherd was to tend to the sheep. Now, sometimes the temptation for us is we think about what does it look like in a UK perspective when we think about sheep in the fields here. Sheep in the fields in the Near East is nothing like sheep in the fields here. So even the breed of sheep would have been quite robust and quite different to what we have here as well. But the role of the shepherd was to tend the sheep. The climate in the Near East was pretty arid and dry. So the role of the shepherd would be to move the sheep around and find green pastures. Now, when we think about green pastures, we think about green fields where sheep are grazing. That's not what would have been happening in the Near East. A green pasture in the Near East would have been somewhere where there was some form of green vegetation amongst kind of all the dirt and dust for them to be able to feed on. So going to find that and giving them sustenance was a challenge, but a really important role for a shepherd to undertake. The shepherd would herd the sheep, taking them to these places wherever they could find food and water, protect them from wild animals and from robbers because there was value in sheep. So if you could acquire some sheep, then it became almost like a monetary value for you. Because people did deal in money, but actually people dealt in livestock and things like that as ways of kind of trading and that kind of stuff. So they would protect them from wild animals and robbers and try to lead them to food and water to keep the flock in good health and maintain their value. So Jesus tells this story in a familiar context. We talked about that right at the start. He's criticised for who he's associating with. That line that the Pharisees say, he takes in sinners and eats meals with them, treating them like old friends. There's this tone of disgust from the religious scholars and the Pharisees about how Jesus is deciding to behave and who he's deciding to associate with. And we've got to understand in society at that time, there was a massive hierarchy as to who was valuable, who was important, who was respected, and who was seen as worth less and in some cases worthless. And I think when we begin to see that when Jesus is trying to tell these stories, he's playing to a wide audience, he's so clever with what he does and what he decides to talk about. Because the reality is, even him using the example of a shepherd is slightly controversial to the audience that he has. Because if he's talking to, yeah, he's talking to people like tax collectors and prostitutes and all these people that he's hanging out with, but also he's being listened to by religious scholars and Pharisees. The idea that he chooses a main character to be a shepherd, they weren't considered particularly great people in society. Their very trade was seen as unclean. And the fact that they were isolated out in the field and not particularly kind of seen as core important members of the community, it was a kind of low importance role that these people were left to. So they weren't necessarily trusted. It's said that if a shepherd was to lose some sheep, he would have to bring them back dead or alive in order to prove that he'd not sold them on. So you get the sense that there was a distrust in the nature of shepherds. So Jesus deciding to say, okay, so you want me to explain what God's like? Okay, well, imagine you lot are all shepherds. They would have almost found that offensive themselves, going, as if you're suggesting that I'm a shepherd, that I could be a shepherd, that I would be that kind of person. He's almost humbling them and putting them in his place. And it's because in society at the time, society functioned on a shame and kind of a shame and praise kind of system, that people were constantly feeling ashamed of what they did or kind of praised for what they did, depending on their behaviour and the things that they're able to do. So Jesus is playing into that narrative by using a character that they wouldn't associate with naturally and wouldn't think was someone that they would want to be like. When he's saying, imagine you were this. So he's clever in the way that he does that. And I think the thing is, what we know about the story is this is just a metaphor. He's not talking about sheep, really. He's talking about the importance of individuals. But if we look at why he chooses sheep, and that scenario, it's quite an interesting one. Because sheep in nature are wanderers. They wander off. They don't necessarily desperately feel that they need to just all stick together. They can find themselves wandering off. So the role of a shepherd is much more challenging because they've got to make sure they're keeping an eye out for the ones who walk away. So I'm pretty sure that the role of a shepherd, it wasn't uncommon for sheep to wander away from the shepherd, and I would say there's a chance that when a sheep wanders away, it might be attacked or stolen without that protection of the shepherd in that moment. And I would look at it and go, okay, well, if you were running a business, surely you would factor in a little bit of collateral damage to say, out of 100 sheep, if while you're out looking after those sheep, one of them was to, fall down a hole, or be attacked by a wild animal, or get injured, or get stolen, surely there'd be some element of, well, you kind of expect that there might be a little bit of collateral damage on the way. But in this story, what Jesus focuses on is not the kind of role of the shepherd to keep the 100 together. He talks about how important it was that the shepherd goes searching for that one lost sheep. And he doesn't just go searching for one lost sheep. He makes the decision in that moment to leave the 99. Now, when you do a bit of reading about this, there's lots of different perspectives on how shepherds worked at the time. They would say, some kind of people say, well, shepherds would work in teams. So if the 99 were left, the other shepherds would take them back to the thing. But Jesus doesn't really major on that point. I think he suggests in the story that he leaves the 99. He leaves them in the wilderness, it says. They're left. And the fact is, this is where I love kind of Jesus's kind of angle on the story, because the fact that he was prepared to leave them to their own devices because one went away gives us a really wonderful picture of who God is and how he functions. Because if you think about it in practical terms, surely the value of that flock is in the majority. It's not in the one. It's in having a group of sheep who are all together. Surely that's the way it works. And surely there's a contingency to lose a sheep every now and then. as long as the majority were cared for. But we've got to remember, Jesus wasn't really talking about sheep. His story was designed to challenge the attitude of the religious leaders and the scholars who were criticizing him. Their point was, what is he doing? What is Jesus doing? Hanging out with sinners. Yeah, and singers. Hanging out with sinners and people of disrepute. Like, what is he doing? That's their question. They're going, surely this isn't okay. This isn't good. This isn't, because this is where shame comes in. If you're associated with those people in society, you are shamed by who you are associated with. So they were trying to push the rules of the day onto Jesus and say, he isn't good because of who he hangs out with. And I suppose this is why Jesus takes this story and not only challenges them by saying, imagine you were a shepherd, and they're already offended by that. But he then brings this whole idea of this is what's important to God. How far would you go to reach out to the people who you're currently quite comfortably writing off in society? So if the shepherd is God and the 99 represents the people who are following him, Jesus paints a clear picture of God's attitude towards the one that went away. He values that person so much that he will relentlessly pursue finding them. And I love this as a challenge for me in my attitude towards other people, but I also love it as a challenge to myself. Because when he describes what happens when he finds the sheep, he doesn't beat them with his rod because they weren't listening or they weren't paying attention or they weren't keeping in line with the rest of the flock. There's no beating in that. So it says that the shepherd's rod, because there's another passage that talks about God's staff and his rod will guide me. It talks about God being a shepherd in that way. But when you read about it, a shepherd's rod would basically be like a policeman's truncheon. But it sometimes have nails in the ends so that it could be used to kind of carefully guide the sheep, but also defend the flock from any predators or robbers. So it was a weapon, really. So when he finds them, he doesn't kind of hit them with the rod or kind of try and beat them into submission. He picks them up, takes the weight, carries that sheep on his shoulders. And I love that idea that if someone is to wander away, find themselves away from God, that the image that we have from this story is that there is no confrontation, no challenge, no moment where it's a bit tense and it's a bit awkward because someone's having to give their excuses or explain. It's more of a case of picking up, carrying that weight that that person is trying to carry for themselves, and then taking them home, bringing them back to where they can be safe and where they can be cared for. And when he returns with the sheep, it's not just a case of putting it back in the flock and then getting your head down and having a rest for the rest of the night. He celebrates and rejoices. He calls in his neighbours and his family to say, look, the sheep was lost, but now it's found. And that's another, that image is then repeated, isn't it? In the next two stories, in the lost coin, the celebration of finding the coin. And in the lost son, it's a feast that is thrown because the son has returned. He was dead, but now he's alive. He's lost and now he's found. It's this continuing unpacking of this picture of who God is, the very nature of who he is. And for me, that's a wonderful image of God. He's not fixated on the 99. Of course he cares about the 99. He's not fixated on the 99. He notices the one that is missing. He seeks out that person and pursues a reconnection. For me, when I think about God and what's important to him, I love this picture of him. I love the fact that's how he thinks, that's how he operates, that's what he values. Because I don't know about you, having been involved in church my whole life, I sometimes feel like we've become fixated at times with the 99. That growing that the group that are all in, that are chosen the right thing and are always there and are always kind of happy to be a part of something or always behaving the right kind of way. Yeah, there's value in that. There is a real benefit for the people who are in doing that. But I sometimes think, in my experience of church over the years, that sometimes when people disappear, when people wander off, when people no longer feel like they can be a part of that community, of that institution, sometimes we just let them go and think, well, they're obviously not taking this seriously enough. They're obviously not interested enough in that, or maybe they're just not holy enough, or whatever terminology we want to throw. Because sometimes people don't just wander off and accidentally find that they're away. Sometimes people deliberately go because they don't feel like they fit, or they don't feel like they could be accepted for who they are, or they don't feel like they are ever truly welcomed. And it's that stuff where when we apply this story onto that, those scenarios, we see the shepherd and his attitude towards those people, that his desire for connection, his desire for relationship never wanes and never stops. And for me, the challenge from Jesus in this story is twofold. He challenges the attitude of the Pharisees and the religious scholars and their attitude towards people that they perceive to be away from God, to be worth less than themselves. And we see it. It's blatant in the start of the story. They're critical of Jesus for who he's associated himself with. And Jesus is basically saying, no, this is who God cares about. This is who God values. And that challenge is relevant for us too. Do we ever view people as being too far away or a lost cause? Jesus dines with those people. And we know from this story that God pursues those people. And I think back to all of my friends who I grew up with and have kind of been in connection with over the years, especially through my teenage years and early 20s, the number of people that I look back now and go, they're no longer going to church. I know that God loves them. And I know that God continues to pursue them. And when I've reached out to them and had connections with them, what I love about it is we can still have conversations about God that, and I want them to know that he is still interested in them. Not about, well, you need to come back to church then. You need to be in church to then kind of unlock the benefit. I'd love them to come back to church. But you know what? I just want them to feel like God is always with them and always for them, wherever they are, whatever they're doing. And I think sometimes we can fall into the trap of going, well, unless they're here, or unless they're regularly in a church on a Sunday, then they're not properly pursuing God. We don't know what goes on in people's heads, do we? And I think for me, this story challenges me to make sure that I always have that attitude where no one is a lost cause, no one is too far away. And knowing that there is that one that the shepherd will continually go out and leave the 99 who are all kind of settled and happy and doing the things that we should do. He'll leave those and pursue the one. But the challenge is also relevant to our own lives. Just as we talked about with the prodigal son, there's a challenge for us in our own lives. Because do you know what? We can sometimes just think about how do we think about other people? But it's also about how we think about ourselves. You may be feeling a little lost and think that you're no longer of interest to God. Do you know it's possible to be regularly attending church for years and years and years and to gradually fall out of connection with God but still be maintaining the habit? Sometimes we can get stale and we can get dry and still be going along to church. And I think for me, the message of God pursuing the one is just as relevant for you as it is for others. So when you're going through things that maybe life is a bit challenging or a bit hard and it's making you feel like, especially if you think, oh, well, I was always told that it would work like this. I was always told that if I prayed this prayer, then this would be the outcome. And what I'm experiencing in my reality means that actually I'm actually just experiencing a sense of disappointment or a sense of frustration that this isn't really what I was told it was like as a kid. Or is it young adult? As a young adult, if you've got that sense of disappointment, I get it, and I understand it. But the point of this story is relevant for you, that whatever has gone on in your life, whatever is going on in your mind, he still pursues you. There's nothing that you can do that would put God off that pursuit. That he remains there for you, whether you're going through a phase of really doubting things or struggling with things or feeling like you're overwhelmed with what's going on in the world. He remains committed to that pursuit of you and that connection with you. So it's a simple story, but one I think is a great example of the nature of God. And I hope that this week we can ponder a little bit on those two thoughts. How does this challenge our opinion of others? But also, how does this challenge our opinion of ourselves? I just want to finish by just giving us a few moments, really, just to close our eyes and talk to God about this. And this is an opportunity to be honest with him about whether there are challenges for you with this stuff. But talk to him about it and I suppose invite him into your journey of trying to work out how do I put this kind of stuff into action. So let's take a few minutes and then I'll pray to finish. Father God, I thank you for Jesus' ability to tell great stories. Stories that would cause a reaction and challenge those who are listening. God, help us to never lose the nuances and the important details of those stories and what they mean for us. Both what they mean for us in terms of how we need to sharpen our attitude towards other people, but also to never forget what the purpose of these stories is for our own lives as well. So God, I pray that as we think about this stuff this week, you'd be with us and help us to see what's important to you. Whether there's things that we need to change in our attitude about others or our attitude about ourselves, God, I pray that you'd begin working in us this week and that you'd strengthen us and be with us and comfort us as we try and get on with our lives this week. So be close and just help us as we try and do that. Amen.